time to cast off on a new adventure. This is Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Good morning and welcome to Real Adventures from wherever you are listening right around the country. Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hapgood joining you this morning to talk all things fishing, boating and the great outdoors. Good morning to you, Redmond.
Good morning, Patrick. And some good news and bad news. Start of the week with a few people ending up in the water with a couple of successful rescues, which is always a great thing from our emergency services and fellow anglers on the water too, Pat, isn't it?
It certainly is. Dad and his twin sons, both nine, were rescued off Western Australia. They set out off Dawesville and a freak wave capsized the boat. Now, the boat sank in a matter of seconds and they were extraordinarily lucky because a VHF floated to the top of the surface where they were able to call for help. But they were in the water for 2 hours. Mm. So Carl Priest and his twin nine-year-old boys, they are incredibly lucky, and there's quite extraordinary vision of this. And we picked up ours off Nine News Western Australia, but quite extraordinary to see, Redmond. And then it followed up a few days later.
It did in Mallacoota. A 23-year-old was fishing about roughly sort of 6 kilometres off a headland, and his rod has ended up in the water, which he's then followed the rod into the water to try and save the rod, but realizing when he resurfaced that the boat was too far away to swim back to. So a little bit silly there, but in hindsight, he, thank God for technology, because he had his mobile phone in his pocket, which are now waterproof, and he has rang the local caravan park via Siri on his phone and managed to call them, who raced out and actually, basically, let's be honest, saved the man's life. Got him. He was in 60 metres of water. Let's be honest, off Mallacoota in Victoria, the water isn't off like it is off Perth at the moment. It's quite chilly. So they got him in. He had hypothermia, but he is alive and well, which is great to hear. So like I said earlier, it's fantastic to have other fishers out there helping out one another when in need, as it should be.
He was incredibly lucky. I think Carl and his sons were equally as lucky, because he actually swam back underneath the capsized boat in order to trigger the EPIRB. And we've often spoken about the importance of having an EPIRB on any boat, regardless yep. of where you're going or how safe that you think it may be. So that enabled rescuers to know exactly where they were.
But what you just said there, Pat, was knowing where your EPIRB is. It's not going through the cabin and searching for your EPIRB. You need to know where it is. So mine is on the passenger side of my boat in a brace, which is in the hub. It's built, well, the pocket, I guess, in the side of the boat is built in the mold
for
my EPIRB. And that's where it is. It's got a purpose. It's not in a box in the cabin that could potentially float away. It's braced in. It has never, I've had the fire extinguisher with the brace that I've got when I bought the fire extinguisher has fallen out a couple of times, but the EPIRB will not move. They're lighter. They will not move. The fire extinguisher is what, 2 and a bit kilo. So when you're hitting big waves at Apollo Bay, and I've only had it fall a couple of times in big seas where you don't want that EPIRB flying around your cabin or in a box, in its box still where you haven't registered. So just register it. It lasts a long period of time. Little bit pricey. I think we reviewed them a few weeks ago. And if you do want to listen to any of our shows of Real Adventures, make sure you download the Real Adventures app. It's on any smart device. There's plenty of recipes on there, as we all love our food as well, Patrick. But like I said, safety, EPIRB, it's one thing you need to have ready to go.
Let's talk about rogue waves and managing that as a skipper when you're out fishing, when, you know, whether you're on a 14-foot boat or a, you know, 6.5-metre boat out in really significant weather. What are the things and cues that you look for when they do approach? Because you've had a really close call earlier in the year where you were hit by a rogue wave, but managed to maneuver the boat and attack it in a way that saved you from capsizing. So for those out there, should it ever occur, and it's going to, if you're going to spend decent amount of time on the water throughout your boating and fishing life, you're going to experience different conditions regardless of, you know, how up to date you are with weather reports and the like. it's just Mother Nature at times will turn its back, and you've got to deal with the consequences sometimes. So what are you looking for when you're out on the boat and all of a sudden that rogue wave appears? Quite clearly, keeping calm is one point, but what are you doing with your boat in order to manoeuvre it? Because there's plenty of YouTube videos that we've seen, Redmond, where boats are turning around, running away from the waves. You know, the best course to safely, or as best as possible, safely manoeuvre the boat around these waves.
So just to clarify a rogue wave and where they often are, a rogue wave, so if you're in, say, 70 metres of water off Bowen Heads and you're fishing on a day like we had during the week, it was a beautiful Thursday we had. I'm fishing there. I know, I'm 99% sure, probably 99.9% sure, I'm not going to get a road wave out there. It's not going to happen. I'm just not going to get a freak wave show up in the middle of nowhere for no reason on a calm day. Days where it's really rough, like you got chop building on chop on swell, you got to remember, if you're fishing, say, Apollo Bay or Portland and you're 20, 30, 40 kilometers out and you're in 20 plus knot winds, chop will build on top of swell. And you add another meter of chop on top of a 3 meter wave as well, and it white caps. That's a lot of power falling off a wave. So realistically, unless you put yourself in a place in deep water, that's when it can possibly happen. But to clarify, a freak wave, it tends to happen in a place that, I guess, to give you an example, a place like the Port Phillip Bay Heads, crossing a bar at Lakes Entrance, Naruma, crossing the Barwon River, where it's an entry point often where it meets either shallow water or also a place where pressure is involved too. And what I mean by pressure, when you've got ocean current, so a place like Cape Shank or down off Eden off Green Cape, where you've got really, really strong currents meeting directional changes of other currents. And what happens is you've got water pushing against one another. And if you're in the bath, sitting there with your soda up, the soda fixes your muscles, whatever that's called, Patrick, you know that
electric
is
soda.
Yep, sitting in the bath there and you push your hands together and clap them, what's going to happen? The water's going to throw up and hit you in the face. And that's the same thing as what I'm talking about around capes and tidal waters. Freak waves often happen in the same areas rather than in the depth of water that if you're just traditionally fishing. Port Phillip Bay, you're fishing the snapper in 20 meters, you're not going to have a massive freak wave just show up out of the middle of nowhere. And like I said to you before, often it's wind that causes it. You don't have the pressure in the bay, in the middle of the bay for snapper. But if you're fishing somewhere, like I said, off Green Cape, you're doing the kingfish and you're knife jigging and you're drifting around, you've got a nice 20 knot wind or even a 10 knot wind, and you're coming around the current and it's meeting another current, hence another example, Port Phillip Bay Heads, it pushes up, it throws water, and it can throw a freak wave. So what I'm trying to say is a lot of this stuff happens where it happens rather than on your general area that a lot of people tend to fish. So it's more of your crossings and places like capes where things happen. Now, how to handle them? Let's be honest, a freak wave is a freak wave sometimes, and you could be unlucky and it could swamp you. I could be out a day off Bowen River, coming in nice and calm, not concentrating properly, and a freak wave can come up. All it takes is a pressure wave to build, coming in with off another wave or off a ship even, and it builds and it throws a wave up. But once again, it's in a place that you sort of know it could possibly happen. So just be extra careful, have your life jacket on. It's a lot safer to do so. Now, for instance, how to approach it. If you are approaching a place where the possibility, let's keep our nose to the direction that you possibly could happen. You want to keep your nose into it. You don't want to take it on from behind and you don't want to take it on from the side. Now, center consoles and other boats, obviously open boats are going to take on water more than a cab boat. That's just common sense. So how are we going to approach it? Even with a center console, whatever it is, get that nose so your nose gets thrown up. You want the nose, because to throw you from top to bottom is the hardest point to flip you. Side to side's easiest, and at the back, swamping you with a wave can fill you up very, very quickly. So be mindful when you're in an area like Lakes Entrance, when you're going out to chase a swordfish, or even if you're heading out for a flathead, make sure you keep your nose into the direction that the waves tend to come from. And that there is how we always try and attack the waves, and using power. So make sure when you hit the wave, you don't hit it 100 mile an hour and go bang and smash your whole boat. As you're approaching it, just push yourself up with the throttle, throw yourself into the air, make sure you back it off so when you land, you fall down comfortably. And that was what I did in the Rip a few months ago, like you said. Don't like talking about it too much, but it was pretty scary that day. But that's what saved my life, by getting my nose into it, keeping it into it, and keeping my throttle up as I hit the wave and then dropping it as I landed.
Let's take a look about what's biting around the country. Victoria, Lake Eildon at the moment, Redmond. There's been some huge Murray cod being caught. Sonny Martins, or his socials, he likes to call himself Freshwater Prodigy, landed a thumping 110-centimetre Murray cod, an absolute smoker. The Bem River is fishing really well with estuary perch being caught primarily on soft plastic lures and in Port Phillip Bay, Redmond.
Yeah, whiting in Port Phillip Bay. Now, the reason I say whiting, we had some massive swell during the week, Pat, didn't we? Huge. You driving home from the footy club, you would have seen it each day. And yes, it eased a bit now, but it was cranking. And once again, fishing down south, that ocean water's coming in, that heats up out there, fishing at the bottom end of the bay, fished really, really well. Western Port fished really well for squid as well on the outgoing tide once that sort of dirty water pushed out of it. There's some squid starting to show up around the Lonnie Bight at Queenscliff, but the problem is that water. You need that clear water. And when you're getting the whiting like we are, you're probably not going to get the squid like we are. Heading over towards the border, we've got Mulloway and the Nelson. They fished really well this week. You're approaching that moon. So that moon always fishes well for the Mulloway if you line up the right time and place. Now, squid strips, you can even run slimy mackerel fillets, even salmon fillets. I find that they are a quite aggressive fish when they're on. You quite often don't get one or two fish. They're a bit like snapper. If they're on, they school up, especially in the Nelson, and they feed really hard. Squid strips is probably my go-to boat, though. Go-to bait, and the fish are well over that meter mark at times, which is really, really, really cool to see.
New South Wales, Port Hacking, and even Sydney Harbour at the moment, Redmond, have had plenty of schools of salmon showing up, casting generally metal slugs or trawling around them with skirts, been working pretty well. It's obviously been quite confusing for anglers at different stages around the lockdown, around where they can and can't go. Obviously, you've got to be within 5 kilometres from your home, from your front door, rather. So if you do want or need more information, make sure you head to the New South Wales government website and you look up your fishing, because they'll give you greater directions around what you can or can't do.
And heading just over the border, just past Nelson, we're going to go to Port Macdonald. Those big barrel bluefin tuna have showed up. Haven't seen massive reports from Portland in the past few weeks, but the reason I say this, and Portland obviously being in Vic, but Port Mac, the fish tend to go there first and then make their way down to Portland. So it was this time last year where I was getting a lot of fish. So for those that can travel, do so. Port Mac is in South Australia, so make sure you stick to the rules and regs that you need to do with the government. But Port Mac, big barrel bluefin tuna, hopefully making their way for Portland for the guys that are in Victoria. And if you go just over to if you head over to Wool Bay Jetty as well, calamari, Pat, hoods up to 35 centimetres, pretty much sunset, sunrise. You're guaranteed your bag pretty much from the reports that I'm seeing. All honesty, look, get down there if you can, because it's time of the year, red hot fishing. Be smart with your jigs. Start with a size 3.0. If it's calm currents and there's no tide, maybe drop it off to 2.5 if you are hitting the bottom too quick, or even if you aren't getting to the bottom because the tide's moving or it's a bit deep, just up it to 3 to 3.5. So just be smart with the size of the jig that you are using.
Across the Bass Strait, beautiful Tasmania, Waiatea, there's been some really large brown trout being caught, Redmond.
Yeah, there has. It was one during the week that was caught on fly, which went 13 pounds, Patrick. And I'm not a pound sort of person, but even I know that's big. So it's a cracking fish. So that's great. Teal Bay is fishing really well for browns and rainbows as well, up to 4 kilo on small divers. And heading into the salt water, tuna out of the east side of the Tasman Channel, Halcos. Skirts are okay, but the Halcos, and we spoke with this from Chris Vasilevsky from Gone Fishing Charters, it'd be a month back now, and he said this year the Brown King, he called it, I don't even know if it's the real name of it, but any Halco that's brown, he reckons it is dynamite, and it's working once again in probably the same fish making their way around the backside of Tassie there, Pat, but 25 to 30 kilo fish out of Tassie as well, so that's really good to see too.
Wrapping up Western Australia, fishing off the rocks in Fremantle, seen plenty of calamari, Redmond. What about snapper around there as well?
Yeah, and if you're fishing off the rocks in Freo, getting those fresh calamari, if you get the right conditions, and you know we always talk land-based fishing with the right conditions, you don't want to go there in a clear, beautiful day. if you can get a bit of onshore breeze breaking in on the surface, pretty much where you want to chuck your baits in. So what I'd be doing is, as that squid comes in, I'd be nearly throwing, you could throw it in live, you can pull the head out, put the head on, or you can strip it up or ring it up. I'd be getting a bait in pretty bloody quick because the snapper fishing's been not too bad when the conditions are right. There's also plenty of tailor right around Perth at the moment, and we know that tailor aren't a fussy fish. Anything metal, grab a spoon out of the sink and put a hook on it, it'll probably catch you one. But let's be honest, they have sharp teeth. So super sharp teeth. So up your leader a little bit more than what you would for a standard salmon, because they will bite you off quite often if you have that lighter leader, and you don't want to lose that $20 or $25 bungee cast there, Patrick.
We've got a massive show of real adventures heading your way this morning. Make sure you stick around. Plenty more to come after the break.
You're listening to Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Welcome back to Real Adventures. It's time for the Social Club, where we take your questions from social media. We've got a Real Brand giveaway every single week. Fishing hat and top to give away for the best questions of the week. The first one is from Sarah. Hi, boys. My husband and I have just taken up fishing. We're useless, but we love it. Do you have any recommendations to get the hooks out of fish's mouths? We don't often catch, but when we do, we don't know what we're doing. Ta, Sarah.
Well, I actually got a very good one here, Patrick. It's called the D hooker.
Pretty simple.
That's what I call it anyway. Go to your local tackle store.
So we're talking your Anacondas, your BCFs.
Yeah, literally anything. Like, it should.
Tackle World.
Yep, any sort of tackle store that sells any sort of tackle stuff will have it. I hope that explains it, because it's simple. You can get literally, it's a plastic handle. To be honest with you, the easiest way to explain it, get a coat hanger. It looks like a coat hanger at the end. You can even just use a coat hanger if you want, just make a smaller U shape. And you just pull it tight and pull up and then pull down with the line, and the fish just falls off.
Now, I think the other thing you always want in the boat is just have an old towel or something. So if you're new to fishing, it's the easiest way to hold a fish without getting spiked or
I think one of the first times you and I fished together about 5 years ago, I think I laughed my head off you when you pulled out a rag. I think I've still even got the video of me having a crack at you for a pinky that you pulled a towel out for back in the day. But no, I won't lie to you, it does work, the old rag trick. But the D-hooker, seriously, if it works on big gummies. I use it on tuna. Like those big barrel tuna I get, they land on the ground and I want my hook back. I pop it along the hook and it just pops out. I use it for flathead probably religiously the most, because it just literally pulls the hook out. And a good set of pliers, Pat, like just a not even a good set. You just want a long snouted set that you can get in there a little bit deeper if you need to. That also works really, really, really well when you're trying to get the hook out of a fish.
Just make sure you keep the WD-40 in the side of the boat, because those things will seize up quickly.
20 seconds.
Good on you, Sarah. Deep diving lures versus shallow diving. How do I know what's best for tuna? I would love to catch a school tuna, have tried and failed recently off Burmy. I've heard mixed reports from people around what's best. Some say shallow, some say deep. Thanks for the help, Stuart.
Stu, that's a good one. To be honest with you, whatever it says on the packet, it doesn't do anyway.
Yeah, I think that's what some people can get confused with. You go, this lure is suitable for bonito, salmon, bluefin tuna, marlin, Maui Maui, every fish under the sun, flathead, dory.
It's a good goldfish. It's a good sales marketing there, Patrick. It's good. That's actually a good point that you make. But even like a Rapala, I'd use them religiously. They're a great lure, a diver, but they say they go to like 40 feet. Well, when I put my rod down in the water and it dives next to the boat, it ain't down 40 feet, I tell you that. But what I would do is I always, for tuna, I run them down deeper. I like my deeper ones. My shallow diving lures tend to be casted. Does that make sense, Pat?
Like, yes, it does.
So if you buy long cast sort of shallow diving, I'll say Rapala, like, just because they're a fantastic brand. It's a go-to for most anglers around. So they work really well. And once again, but when you're trolling, I actually match it to the size of the fish rather than the depth. So I'm not going to run a big Magnum 40 or 50 for a school tuna. I might drop it down to a 10 or a 15. And traditionally, that's the feet as such they dive. But they are a smaller, I guess, what would you say, a 10-inch, a 10 dot feet pattern, probably be only 3 inches, you reckon, 3 or 4 inches long, where those magnets are like 8.
And I think some people get confused as well when it comes to fishing for tuna around how close you actually have the lures to the boat. People look and go, you're going to be frightened off by the motors when it's actually the opposite. You're trying to stir up the enthusiasm from the fish, and you're fishing them close, Redmond. Every time, you fish during the week, and you've got them close.
Yeah, so and a lot of it comes down to your day as well, Pat. So if you're on a really super calm day, I tend to run them back a little bit further from the boat because they can be a bit flighty. But if it's slightly rough, you are spot on, especially those big tuna that we tend to chase. We're often a little bit on the rougher side, let's be honest. Oh yeah, your first lure is only a handful of meters back behind the boat at times, and your diver can be even shorter. It can be literally nearly touching your prop at times. So you're exactly right. So don't be afraid to run them too closer to the boat than further than them back. And I find that your divers, the closer you have them to the boat, the more pull on it at the boat, the actual harder they sort of go. They dart around a bit more, where if you let them back more, they tend to be more placid. And I don't know if that's just a perspective side of it, but it definitely for me seems the way that the lure works in itself. So I would just be sticking to the size of the fish you're saying for the school tuna that you've said, anywhere from that 10 to 20, even up to 30 at times if they are feeding hard, but stick to that 10 to 20 for a regular catch, I should say.
Good on you, Stu. Hi, guys. Carpet or the new mod flooring that I see everywhere, like C-Deck and UltraDeck or similar. Carpet is so much cheaper. I'm not sure I can justify how expensive all the mod flooring is. Cheers, Pete from West Australia.
I love my Mercury engine. I love it. I literally love it. But I'll tell you what, I nearly put the flooring in before the Mercury engine because my feet at the end of the day, Pat, I tell you, it makes a difference. That U-Deck that I run in my boat, I haven't got the best feet, to be honest with you. I've got pretty flat feet. I get very sore in the feet. And I know you do as well, Pat, because with footy and stuff, you always got sore feet. Your toes are the ugliest on the planet, let's be honest. But it's definitely much nicer on your feet.
I think you make a good point because what it is, it's a foam layer that's glued to the bottom of your flooring, this mod flooring that Pete's talking about. Now, yes, it is expensive, but if you've been out on the boat for 10 hours and especially if you're barefoot, nowadays I'll chuck my runners once we've got in the boat just to look after my feet. It just gives you that cushioning that you don't get from other flooring. You certainly don't get it from checker plate. You don't get it from your fiberglass flooring. And then your carpet, I mean, it looks nicer than, say, checker plate, but it doesn't give you that same.
And also the cleaning factor with carpet, and people will say, oh, how does it clean up? I'll tell you what, if my floor isn't destroyed already in the whatever time I've had my boat, then no one can destroy it because
exactly.
It doesn't smell either. Like I've had barrel blood everywhere through this and it doesn't soak anything up. It doesn't. Where if you use carpet, not a word of a lie, you could be there hours and hours with Domestos. Domestos is a product that will clean carpet to the best that it will get back to, but you just can't do it, Pat.
It is expensive though.
It is expensive. It definitely is. I think mine cost me roughly $4,000 for my 6 meter boat. So it is pricey, but if you're using your boat regular, I'd be definitely looking at an investment, even putting $20 away a week or something until you get up to it, whatever it takes to get it. I'd be, if you're keeping the boat, I'd definitely be something that goes in the floor of my boat before, like I said, the engine.
All right, last one is from Bethany. Aaron, how do you stop squid from inking everywhere? I've seen it in your socials. My boyfriend, he looks to aim for me. Cheers.
This could be from your sister, Beth, Pat, because George loves his fishing. That's a good one. I actually took a few kids out during the week with the ink, and I had another fellow who doesn't fish a lot, and he said to me, oh, there's going to ink everywhere. It's going to ink. And I'm like, it won't ink. I said, I'll show you how to stop them from inking. They're like, what? So the first mistake people make with squid is they tend to keep it in the water. Well, why are squids in the water? it can just keep reproducing ink. So you need to get it out of the water. And once it does that sort of initial ink out of the water, that without going back in water, that tends to be that ink that's lost. Now, when you get it up into the boat or towards the direction of the boat, so let's talk about an average squid, Pat. We'll talk about a nice 15, 20-centimeter hood. I tend to lift it up with my rod. So I pull it up and I get it out of the water, and you can hold it out with your rod, and then I swing it up to me. So just under half a lot, roughly half a rod length, I'll have hanging out in line, and I'll lift it up, and then I'll grab the squid jig with my hands when it comes to me. Why the squid isn't in the air? Now listen to the numbers here. 95% of the time, they don't ink. The 5% they do, it's often a face full. But 95% of the time, they don't ink. You can hold it up for a photo and they don't tend to go. But if you knock something, if you knock the side of the boat, or if you knock the bait board, or if your young child tends to knock it with the rod accidentally, game over. You're done. It's ink everywhere. So it's when it touches something is when the squid actually inks. Hopefully that saves you a few dollars at a car wash there, Beth.
Love that. Beth, well done. You are our Real Brand winner for this week. Send us a direct message and we'll send it out to you as soon as we can. Make sure you download our Real Adventures app to join in the conversation. Send us a question. You can do that via our app or, of course, via our Real Adventures socials. Plenty more of Real Adventures coming up after the break.
Gearing up for Dometic. Enjoy the great outdoors with all the comforts of home with Dometic.
It's time for gearing up for Dometic. Enjoy the great outdoors with all the comforts of home with Dometic. iFish starts in 2 weeks' time, September 5. Paul Worsling, the host of iFish, joins me this morning. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Patrick. Sounds like I need to be out fishing. If iFish is on in 2 weeks' time, I've got fish to catch.
Well, we're looking forward to it. So as you said, it's in 2 weeks' time. What can we expect from this season of iFish?
Well, based on current situation, it's been difficult to say the least, but we still managed to get out there and do some incredible things. We're talking massive southern bluefin tuna, 80 kilometres off Apollo Bay. Then we're 170 kilometres off Hamilton Island, catching some of the tastiest and biggest fish you could ever hope for. And then just when you think it's all about interstate, we're back in Eildon catching brown trout for 12 pounds and maybe even a trip to Bem River, catching estuary perch and brim. So obviously difficult at present, but we are trying to make every little inch into a mile, and it's still been a lot of fun because we just love it.
Speaking of the Bem River, we saw on your socials during the week there was a few really nice estuary perch being caught. Take us through how you're fishing for those. They look spectacular. It's a great time to fish for them now if at all you can, depending on your COVID situation right around the state. But how are you attacking them when you went there and fished?
Yeah, you're right, mate. The next couple of months is time to catch EPs. We tried a lot of things. Every time we go away working, we always have every single base covered. And we had shrimp under a float, which worked extremely well, live shrimp. We used small hard body Rapalas over the weed beds and even squidgy 80 mil bloodworm wriggler soft plastics. And just about drifting, just using the water snake along, cast off plastics, come with the stealth, and every single method we tried caught perch, which tells me the next few months they are on the job, and some absolute beauties too.
One of the things that invokes huge passion with anglers are southern bluefin tuna. You mentioned fishing 80 kilometres offshore off Apollo Bay. You're basically in Tasmania. That must be a hell of an experience.
My back has not recovered yet, and I'm dead set serious. My lumbar is killing me, and your crazy mate Red suggested this. We went 80 kilometres. I felt my breakfast coming up at one stage, and I just soldiered on. We hooked fish well over 100 kilos. It was just ridiculous. And we saw stuff, and all of us just looked at each other. There was a million red bait and pilchards getting balled up. They were schooling. Seals are punching through them. Dolphins punching through them. Gannets diving from above. And then the massive whale crashed through the middle and took a stack of fish, 100 kilo bluefin under them. And we just stared in disbelief. And the one word we said was Attenborough. We felt like we were on a BBC documentary. And forgetting the tuna, forgetting the fun, forgetting the mateship, I will never forget that scene of the whale coming through all that action. It was unbelievable. We have underwater footage of a whale coming through. It literally makes your spine tingle.
Did you try your best version of a voiceover for the episode itself, or have you just left that to the great Sir David Attenborough?
The Southern Great White Whale comes. No, I didn't. I did nothing. I just stuck to the fishing.
For most people, when they think of Hamilton Island, they think of sunbathing on a beach. There's obviously beautiful Whitehaven Beach. So you've got the Great Barrier Reef and the snorkeling and scuba diving that accompanies that. It's obviously a great fishery, but not something we always look to do first and foremost. It's almost a plus one in many respects because it's such a diverse region of things that you can do and adventures that you can go on. Take us through that.
And you know, that is a great way of summing up Hamo. It's just a place to drink cocktails, run on the beach. But I've been fortunate enough to meet some incredible friends that know the fishing so well. And I've got a bit selfish in my older days, I must admit, Patrick. I went on this trip just to share the experience with my boy. And unfortunately, left mum behind. She couldn't come. There just wasn't enough room. And I spent 4 days fishing 170 kilometres of Hamilton Island. And I slept next to my boy in the bunk every night. And he woke me at 6 o'clock in the morning. Come on, Dad. And we fished till midnight. And we caught some of the most incredible red emperor that broke hooks, red emperor that broke 100-pound line, largemouth nanogai, giant trevally. I was having my breakfast one morning, bacon eggs, 12-foot sleepy shark while I'm having my breakfast. It's just the sort of thing that very few people will ever get the chance to share that with their family, their best mate, the people they love. And the stuff we filmed, not only was it great television, but more importantly for me, it was stuff that my boy and I will just never, ever, ever forget. And I can't wait to go and do it again. It was very, very cool.
We're chatting to Paul Worsling, the host of iFish. If there's one fish throughout the new season that you're looking forward to showing people, Paul, which is it and what capture is it?
That's like saying you've got two kids, haven't you, Patrick?
Yeah, well, I do have a favourite because George is
Which one's your favourite?
George is very, very easy, and Hurricane Flick at the moment is an absolute nightmare. So
you're not supposed to pick a favourite. But I love it. I love it. Look, it's I've only got one kid, so I'm safe. Yes, the favourite and the least favourite. look, I think it's too hard to pick one, but, oh, wow. Computer says no. Look, for me, every fish, the next fish is going to be the most favourite. The one I caught last is the most favourite. I think some of the stuff I did off Hamilton Island with Jet was probably the best just because we got to turn the cameras off, we caught plenty of fish, and we just put lines down, having dinner, a couple of drinks, just chilling out, and we caught some red emperor that would push maybe 10 kilos, and they're a special fish. And even for my editor, Eddie, and my producer come along, he didn't drop a line all week. And just before he left, I said, you boys have to drop a line. He dropped one line to the bottom, caught his first red emperor ever in his life, 5 kilos, and the smile on his face, that was possibly my favourite fish of the series because it gave something to someone that never had before, and that's pretty cool.
Can I give you my 2 cents? Lake Eildon, giant trout. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, look, I've still got a smile on the face, mate. We have a permit to film, and I've got to say we don't rub it in people's faces because I actually feel bad. A lot of people are struggling a lot at the moment. So I'm literally working only when I need to, get stuff done, get home. I'm not sharing any photos because I just don't think it's fair at the moment. But yesterday, Christy and I left home very early. We drove to the Eildon pondage. We did have some advice that fisheries had stocked the pondage with some pretty good fish. And the whole idea was set a picnic table up, cook a pot of coffee, cup of tea, snag from the barbie for lunch, and just enjoy the moment. I heard a great quote recently, you've got to be where your feet are. No point thinking about tomorrow or yesterday, be where your feet are. And we were where our feet were, and we caught some spectacular trout, like as good as you'd get anywhere in the world. They're stocked fish, they're brood stocked, but they're still special. And we drove home over the Black Spur last night with a very big smile on our faces because you've seen the pic, Paddy. It was pretty cool.
Can I just end on that note of it's so important that it's great to see on iFish, but all these local community towns that you see great fishing at, they need the support of anglers going there and fishing and enjoying the environment, spending their dollars once we get out of this lockdown situation because it's been so hard for those rural communities, hasn't it?
Never a truer word said at Eildon yesterday. The bakery, we love going to Eildon Bakery. They said we're closed until COVID finishes. We did a piece to camera in the main street, the bridge over the pondage, the roundabout, at 4 p.m. You couldn't think of a bigger, and not one car bothered us for the 10 minutes we're there. regional Victoria, Australia. I was at Ben River last week, and these beautiful people, like the nicest people that ever meet in your life, they had a booking of 29 people from Knox that couldn't come to regional Victoria because they couldn't leave the red zone. They lost $5,000 in income for one weekend. They get no compensation because they're in regional, and regional's open. And you've got to remember, Victoria, we're one state. We're not metro. We're not regional. We are one. And every single person is hurting so much. And you've just got to back and be ready when this finishes. Go to regional, buy a pie, stay the night, get some bait, and just support, because every single person I speak to, Patrick, is hurting in some way, shape or form. And it's going to take a bit to get out of this, but I'm hoping that fishing and a bit of travel might help.
Beautifully said. Paul Worsling, the host of iFish. iFish is coming out in 2 weeks' time for their all-new series. We can't wait for it. Paul, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, mate.
You're listening to Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Welcome back to Real Adventures. Redmond, we've seen over the last probably 5 to 6 years the increase in popularity around jet skis and fishing and fish skis, as they've become affectionately known. And Sea-Doo really has controlled and cornered this market. They've got purpose-built watercraft specifically for fishing. And for the first time in 2022, we're seeing Yamaha starting to roll out fishing-focused wave runners. So it becomes their sort of first proper direct rival to the Ski-Doo Fish Pro range. But what's different about this, and what I really like about it, is that you can custom make the shells and the structures that are on the back of these jet skis to suit the fishing that you like. So I read a fascinating article on boat sales during the week, and they had some great photos around how they'll look and how functional they'll be. And the great part about it is it can all be taken off. So you can use your jet ski during the week for, you know, whatever it might be. And then when it comes to using it for fishing, you can then add on, it's almost like a trailer cage at the back where you attach your cool box and the like, and it's got all your accessories, whether it be rod holders. You know, there's even little attachments so you can have your fish finders and those sorts of things. So they've hit the market. They're not super cheap, but estimates early around that sort of $1,500 mark once it lands in Australia, plus all your other add-ons. Nothing in boating is ever cheap, so it doesn't really surprise us. But it's certainly some consumer-friendly competition for Sea-Doo, which is good to see, Redmond.
I was speaking to the missus. I've got the new man at the moment, the new little fella. What is he, nearly a year and a half? Not even. He's 16 months, I think. So I said to Kari, I want to buy a jet ski. I'd love to buy a jet ski, take him out when he gets a bit older. And she told me basically no straight away. But it won't be for fishing, I'll tell you that, because I give these guys credit out there, these jet ski guys that are out there fishing.
It's gung-ho.
They are mad. They are absolutely mad. They're in wetsuits, half of them, fishing.
Yes.
They're wet. They're traveling. Oh, buy a tinny.
Speaking of tips from you, it's time for Red's tip.
It is, and it's just a little one coming on the back of live baiting, using live baits and the like. So we're traveling down doing I filmed a show with Paul Worsling, actually, on Gone Fishing Charter's boat for iFish probably a few months ago, and this is probably the last time that I did use this, hence why I speak about it now. But we managed to scoop up red bait in the water. Now, we use just a standard squid net to get them in, but that's all good, getting them into the live bait tank. But it's actually getting them out of the live bait tank is the absolute prick of a thing, because they are small and they are slimy and they swim. So if I were you guys, go buy a small aquarium net, because you're not only going to not damage your fish as much by chasing it around the tank, jamming it and scaring it, put the net in, scoop your bait up, whatever you want, and you're able to place it onto your hook with ease. Now,
it also looks after the live bait, doesn't it?
Pardon?
It also looks after the live bait, doesn't it? Because you're not shoving your hand in the tank, especially
going mad.
Yeah, especially if you don't have a really well set up bait tank that has great airflow. Every time you add something else into it, whether it be your hand or whatever, yep, it the water quality you know, starts to really suffer.
Yeah, and with your live bait as well, when you're putting them on, I always like to get a mate to help me, because it's quite often with one hand, especially if it's a big slimy and you're chasing a marlin, always get, like when you're bridling, I'm talking about bridling a bait, you got to use two hands to get that Dacron or wax thread through the nose of the fish. You get your mate to hold it for you, makes it a little bit easier and a little bit user-friendly. If you are going to purchase one of these nets, I'm tipping don't buy it from an aquarium store, because they probably put $20 extra on top of it. So maybe eBay. Go to eBay. You don't need nothing too expensive. I'm sure you'll get one for $5 or $6, and it'll make a big difference. It's now time for the flying gaff, Patrick. Take it away.
Yeah, the flying gaff this week. I wanted to give actually the flying gaff. I was looking through the Anaconda catalog. I love looking through different catalogs, and I wanted to give Anaconda the gaff because they've got a metal detector, which I don't think anyone ever needs. But they've got them for $1,029, and it's a bit like me walking up and down the Bunnings aisles. I don't need anything in there, but I just like having it sometimes. And I have no need.
You were going to say Aldi.
Well, definitely Aldi, but I have no. Well, the middle aisles in Aldi, they actually should be put when everyone into lockdown. The middle aisle in Aldi would be just about the busiest place
COVID
in
central.
The state. Absolutely, because everyone's going in there looking for things that they don't need. Anyway, the metal detector is definitely something that you don't ever need. But it's just one of those things that's like, oh, I wonder if there is something on the beach there.
Do you know who's right into this? A very good friend of the show, Sammy Goodwin's old man. He ventures out going on his little gold hunts all the time, Patrick. So you might have a friend to go do it with if you purchased it.
I'm not. My wife would kill me. So I was going to give the gaff to Anaconda and they're ridiculously cheap. I don't even know if it's cheap. It might be expensive, but it seemed cheap to me for a metal detector. Now, the flying gaff this week goes to you, Aaron, because earlier in the week you broke your foot, and now,
I did.
Like an athlete of the sea, you've been clipped, and you are now walking around in a moon boot looking somewhat of the fool. So well done, Coco. You haven't had a gaff for a while, but the gaff is yours for this week.
I tripped over the jockey wheel. That sums up my day. Oh, crap. I'm going to
thanks take for your, thanks for your company this morning. We hope you've enjoyed the show. We'll see you next week on the water.